Today on Movie Wallers, we talk about John Wick 2, 50 Shades Darker, and Logan. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
I only just managed to make my way through the intro there.
I know.
I've got a mouthful of cookie. Chocolate.
Yes. Very British.
Biscuits.
English crumb cookies.
Very yes. English afternoon with yes. tea and English biscuits.
Yes.
We're recording from Yazdi's house.
How cultured.
And we have some delicious tea, as always.
Yes, my tea is very delicious. Going down very smoothly, almost like it's spiked, but it's not.
Actually, we should do, spiked tea. Is that a thing?
No. Does anyone? I don't think you can. I don't think you can spike tea.
Oh, that'd be horrible.
Can have, like, rum with coffee and Irish cream coffees, that kind of thing. But I've never heard of...
I think tea is too delicate.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
But no.
I'm sure somebody's tried it.
It's like I feel an experiment coming along. I'm just depressed because I've got to do my taxes tonight. Our taxes.
It's February.
I know, but I said
we're trying to be organized.
I said this year I'm not going to leave it until like the last minute again and have that stress of like, oh, where is everything? So today's the day I've committed to doing it. I'm not looking forward to it at all.
Have you received all your stuff in the mail?
Mostly.
Yes, I think yesterday was the deadline for... Well, not yesterday, this week was the deadline for them to mail everything to you. So I think most of... I'm not going to use that as an excuse. I've got enough of it. But I'm like, I don't want to do it.
So let's not waste time talking about taxes and bore everyone.
I'm just saying it's winding.
Joe's spreading the boredom.
Yes. Well, Rashmi, I guess we've got three films to get through. That's what you're trying to push us along.
I am. All sequels.
Indeed they are, yeah.
Sequelitis, yes.
Yeah, the thing that we were most afraid of.
You see, that normally happens in the summertime, right? Where you get, like, you know, all the big franchises come out. So it's interesting that February is seeing so many, and they're quite big releases, right? I mean, you know, 50 Shades, obviously the Valentine's tie-in. But
okay.
But John Wick and Logan, I think, are potentially summer blockbusters that they're releasing.
Maybe they figured that, you know, there are so many tentpole movies already positioned in summer, they don't want to fight them.
Right.
And they have an opportunity to make money right now. But, because summer's kind of far, actually. A couple more months.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Okay. Well, which one should we talk about first?
50 Shades Darker, because I haven't seen it and I'm dying to hear what you both saw of this and thought of this. Yeah. Right, and interestingly, I was away... And you two both still decided to watch it, which I thought was rather interesting.
Well, my excuse is that Yazdi was going to watch it, so I had to keep him company.
One for the team.
So I'm really interested I'm genuinely interested because Joe said to me, "Rashmi, you should go and watch this one," and I just thought it looked really bad. And it's running at 9% on the Tomatometer. I don't think I've seen anything run that low. And I can't say I hated 50 Shades of Grey, but I certainly didn't like it enough to rush out and see this one. So let me do the intro for this one then. So this is the second in the trilogy, I guess. I guess we're going to get another one. And while Christian wrestles with his inner demons, Anastasia must confront the anger and envy of the women who came before her. So gone is, director Sam Taylor Johnson. And instead we have director James Foley, who I was looking up his IMDb, and he's done a couple of interesting sort of music videos, more raunchy type movies, I think, in the past. So maybe he'll bring something different to the game. Screenplays written by Neil Leonard, and of course this is based on those famous books by E.L. James. This stars Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan again, and Eric Johnson is new in this one, and a whole bunch of others. Even Rita Ora makes an appearance here. So, 50 Shades Darker, worth the watch, or is it really 9%?
It depends on what you want. So let me start by saying this. There is a line in the movie that Dakota Johnson utters towards towards the kind of the latter half of the movie, which is word for word a line from the movie Working Girl,
okay,
which was made 30 years ago.
Which had a mother in it.
Which had a mother in it. And originally I thought this can't just be flat out plagiarism. So this has to be some kind of an homage to, you know, the fact that, you know, now it's Dakota.
Right.
Now it's Dakota Johnson. And the same line was spoken by Melanie Griffith, you know, in Working Girl, like 30 years ago. So instead of being an homage, I think that line only goes around to making the point that the movie is so hopelessly outdated in all its principles and thinking. It might as well have been released, you know, in 1987 when The Working Girl was made. So for a movie that is about sex, it's so coy and it doesn't want to really go anywhere. And I think there is a good bruising, deep movie to be made on this subject matter. And neither the first movie and especially this one don't go anywhere close to that. It's too safe and it's frankly pointless. So
Joe.
So you're with the the 91%.
I wouldn't go that far. I would still recommend it because it's beautiful people in beautiful settings. So if that's your thing, by all means, go for it.
Joe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the ratings here and I completely understand why it's running 9% on the tomatometer. But for me, I think they did it. They made it so bad, it's actually good.
No. Are you having a Cure for Wellness moment here?
No, it's really funny. Look, it's got such a paper-thin plot. The characters are ridiculously simple, but I really got the sense that the actors were having fun with the role. I mean, the dialogue is so horribly bad in places, but I just couldn't help. There was a little bit of a nudge and a wink behind all of it. And I think the thing that you just mentioned there, Yazdi, is like, you know, well, let me use my mother's line and throw that in here and let's just have some fun with it. Look, it's not highbrow, it's not high art or anything like that. But the movie kept my interest all the way through.
Make no mistake. Yeah, it kept my interest.
That was
too
surprising, yeah. Because I think the first one bored me a little. Whereas this one, it's really bad daytime soap opera type stuff. I mean, the characters have no rhyme or reason to do a lot of the things that they're doing. You know, first she wants to go into the room, then she doesn't want to go into the room. And, you know, there's no apparent reason for the change. She just, you know, just does. You know, it's like, oh, well, okay, now I'm game. You know, it's so the whole thing is kind of ridiculous, but it kept my interest, which is surprising.
And think, interest because it's saucy and raunchy and, you know, there's nothing wrong with a bit of sauce and a bit of
raunch. It's no raunchier than Game of Thrones, and I think, you know.
Game of Thrones is way more raunchy.
I was going to say, yeah, Game of Thrones can be pretty
nasty
sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I gave up on Game of Thrones, but I mean, this is like PG-13 type stuff. I think they use the hardware a little more creatively, but it's not.
Less than number one?
I think it had less And the number one, yeah. I mean, I don't think this is for a movie that's touted as being, you know, a erotic fiction type thing. There's nothing there. There's like a couple of scenes, but the rest of it is just bad daytime soap. And you know, it's fun in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the plot, I mean, really, there is no plot here. There really is no plot here. And this was the same problem with the first movie. It literally ended with the elevator closing and her walking away. I mean, just in order to keep the movie going, every once in a while something happens. Some semblance of a twist is thrown onto the screen and it's resolved in the next 10 minutes. And then they just move on and it just kind of lumbers along. Now, again, it's so beautiful to look at. You know, it's so beautiful to look. It's very well made. It's gorgeous to look at. And Dakota Johnson carries the whole movie, you know, bless her heart. I mean,
and she did the last time.
She soldiers on. And so it's a very, there is not a minute of this movie that's not watchable.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just comes across as, why bother? I mean, I have something to say which is political, but I'm going to hold off.
Go, just do it. Go and get in there.
Because, you know, there have been amazing movies made on the theme of, you know, relationships that go awry based on the sexual interaction between the two characters. Mm-hmm. There was 9.5 Weeks. There was Fatal Attraction. There have been so many good movies which, you know, really went there. And this movie just seems afraid of, you know, going to any place which would offend its, you know, PG-13 audience. And the reason why I say the movie is so dated in its thinking is because, you know, in the first 5 minutes, Dakota Johnson is naked, like naked, right? I mean, her clothes are off. And Jamie Dornan keeps his jeans on. And this is not just the first scene in the movie. This is horrific double standards. You know, the movie could have been called 50 Ways to Undress Dakota Johnson, because that's what most of the movie is. She's just undressed.
Maybe that's why I liked it.
She's repeatedly undressed again and again and again by Jamie Dornan's character, and he literally keeps his pants on the whole time.
So this is an R.
Yeah, I mean, no,
but it is an R
because there's a lot of Dakota Johnson on the screen all the time. And, you know, again, I mean, normally this wouldn't bother me, but my thing is, this movie is made for a predominantly female audience based on material from which was, you know, popularized by a predominantly female audience. And then why is it that only Dakota Johnson is the one who is naked? I mean, how does the marketing
because
for this
Jamie
works?
Because Jamie Dornan was pretty naked in the first one.
Was he?
Yeah. Not that I remember.
And, you know, again, Jamie Dornan is awful here. And, you know, I've seen the first season of The Fall.
Yeah.
And he's a good actor.
Yeah.
No.
And in the, you know, I haven't read any of the books here.
Yeah.
But
which
I've
heard are a waste of time.
Right. I don't know. I haven't read, but according to me, based on at least what I've seen on screen, the Christian Grey character is the most interesting character because he has all this baggage and he has all this darkness within him and he's fighting within himself. And there's such a great movie to be made. I mean, look at the Mickey Rourke character in 9 1/2 weeks. You know, you can really plumb that. And I don't know if it's the direction or if it's the actor, but no. He just comes across completely ineffective. Like, he's not able to convey any of that.
I know exactly where the problem is. It's in the writing. E.L. James does not know how to write a male character. They are either rapists, you know, psychotic male chauvinist type, or they've got so much emotional baggage that they're... you know, more neurotic than the most neurotic female friend that you have ever encountered in your life. I mean, this is the problem with the Christian Grey character. He has no, he has all these neuroses and hang-ups. For somebody who then is portrayed to be this, you know, big kind of confident, you know, billionaire businessman, the guy has no kahunas. I mean, it really, or cojones, I should be saying it, but he doesn't... He's a very poorly written male character. And then the other main male character in there is so one-dimensional. Yeah. Like, you know exactly where the plot line is going to take him from the moment he enters the screen. And sure enough, when it gets there, it's like, ugh, really? So she doesn't know how to write a male character. And I think her female characters are much better. But I think Dakota Johnson manages to rescue some... you know, some element of Anastasia that makes her interesting to watch. And she did that in the first movie, and she carries on doing that here.
Yeah.
So she's kind of fun to watch as she kind of grapples with some of the horrendous dialogue and somehow sells us on it.
Mm. So a lot was made about, you know, Sam Taylor Johnson being replaced by James Foley. I mean, any change in the direction or anything better, anything...
I think it's a shinier movie than the first one. I don't know. It seems to be more polished, like visually.
Yeah.
To me, visually, it's really very well. You know, it's a very good-looking movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there is any depth here, because by the time you're getting to the second part of a three-part franchise, you should be getting into the serious themes, and movie keeps shying away. It's so coy, and it's...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's why I think it's so pointless. Why are you making a movie about... a very dark, sadomasochistic sexual relationship between two people when you're not going to go there.
Yeah.
So it just seems like because, a useless exercise.
Because it's at its core, it's just bad soap. I mean, really, it is, you know, and it's one of those plots where, you know, this happens, and then she saw him say, oh my God, and then this is revealed, and that's revealed, and, you know, it's not done well. It's done very much like, you know, General Hospital or the Days of Our Lives, because that's the depth of the writing here. And I think that's, you know, ultimately where 50 Shades fails is, you know, not only were the books badly written, I haven't read them, but I'm told that they're almost, you know, grammatically incomprehensible, but there's not a lot of good structure to the story. why did I enjoy it? I thought the actors were having fun. I really did. And there's a scene involving a helicopter towards the end, which literally had me giggling in its ridiculousness.
It was so silly.
I mean, it was, I was like, okay, here's how this is going to go. Oh, yep. Yep. Oh, yep. There it is.
And this is what I mean. That somebody just like barely woke up from sleep and threw some conflict on the screen, you know, involving this helicopter. It is,
and it came from nowhere. It's like, it just really, it's came like Christian Grey has to take a trip and off he goes in his helicopter. I mean, I was having so much fun watching it play out, because it's genuinely bad and it's genuinely fun for me.
Okay. So let's wind this one up then. I think I'm already bored of listening to you talk about it. Yes, Dee.
I'll go first. I think if you like to see movies about good-looking people, you know, with and without clothes on, you know, with a reasonably well-made movie, it's very, very watchable. I think anything less than that, the movie fails. I actually did not believe these two. And I believe Dakota Fanning, but I never believe the Jamie Dornan character. And so, you know, because I don't inherently believe in these two, it just becomes like, you know, like a fancy dress party, like, you know, people are just wearing costumes and walking around. And then at the end, I just felt like these are stupid, privileged people. And, you know, I don't really care about their problems. So, yeah, 4 out of 10.
Wow. Joe.
And I honestly, genuinely watch this movie with a big smile on my face, because I think it is clunky. But I think it looks good, and not just in a naked flesh way, but I think it's well constructed. You know, it's got some good use of music. You know, it's one of those soundtrack movies from, you know, back in the day. So, you know, I've no doubt that the soundtrack is available on, in all good record stores everywhere. And I kind of enjoyed watching it go through its motions, even though it didn't really go anywhere. And the characters were flat. So I'm going to give this a 5 out of 10. It's not awful. It really isn't. And if you go in there with the right mindset of not expecting high art, and come on, who goes into this movie expecting, you know, the next great American movie? Nobody, right? So, but what it's supposed to do, I think it worked. In fact, you know, as long as you don't think that what it's supposed to do is, you know, get raunchy, because it really doesn't. It's so flat in that regard. I mean,
some of the sex scenes are really played for humor, even in this one.
Absolutely. The whole movie, I felt, was,
I mean, it's really meant, it's played for humor. I mean, there's this one contraption he puts, you know, between her ankles, and then it's completely played for humor. I'm like, what's going on here? Is this a spoof of a, you know, 50 Shades movie?
And is that because you own that contraption and you know how it should be used? Or
But I don't know. I mean, the movie's become a caricature of itself.
That's why it's so fun.
It'll be interesting to see what number 3 does then. I mean, this one's really, it's going to be more of the same. I mean, panned.
Honestly, I think a better actor, a better male lead would have, you know, along with Jamie Dornan, might have lifted the movie a little bit.
I'll disagree with you there, because I think he did okay. His character is so horribly weak and
sounds flat
and neurotic, and you know, he's, you know, he has these lines to deliver, you know, that are like, oh, you know, I missed you so much, terribly, you know. I mean, there's no reason.
Joe, there's nothing wrong with that line. I'm joking.
But it doesn't align with the position of power that he holds in life otherwise, right? It's a very schoolgirl's look at the way that things might work. Right, you know, this millionaire who's going after this, you know, younger woman who he's obsessed by, and she, you know, it doesn't work. So, but I think that's in the writing and not in the performance. For me, he had a nudge and a wink all the way through, and I thought he did fine.
And poor Kim Basinger is, you know, rolled out, you know, completely like wasted, you know, for like 5 scenes, and it only goes to remind you, you know, about 9.5 weeks, which even now is so provocative. So I think people should just rent 9.5 weeks. That movie has a lot more to say about sexual relationships.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh, it's good.
You should see it.
I don't think I ever saw it, yeah.
Should.
All right.
Right, moving on then, before Rashmi starts yelling at us. We have John Wick and we have Logan. Let's talk about John Wick 2. Yazdi, do you want to? Oh no, this one's me. Okay, so it's a sequel to the movie from a couple of years ago, 2014, John Wick. And it's about a legendary hitman, John Wick, who I hadn't heard of before the movie. I don't know where the John Wick lore comes from, whether it's, you know, got its basis in books or comic books or whatever. But for me, it was in the movie that came out of nowhere in 2014. It was terrific fun. So here, John Wick, fortunately, his dog is not touched at the beginning of this movie, which was the basis for him going ape shit last time. In this movie, he's forced back in by a former associate plotting to seize control of a shadow international assassins guild, bound by a blood oath. And that's the reason he ends up having to go back into this underworld this time around. John travels to Rome, where he squares off against some of the world's deadliest killers. The director is Chad Stahelski, once again, who helmed the original John Wick movie. And the movie stars Keanu Reeves, obviously, John Leguizamo, Bridget Moynihan, as the main characters. We have a performance by Common. Lawrence Fishburne makes an appearance here, Ian McShane. So all three of us have seen this one. So Rashmi, I guess you didn't get to talk while we were debating 50 Shades. What did you think of John Wick 2?
Okay, so I loved the original John Wick, and I started keeping a body count this time, because remember last time I was telling you I wish I'd kept a body count. So this time I started keeping a body count, and less than 40 minutes in, when I reached about 20, I gave up. So, you know, like I said, I thought Chapter 1 was awesome, but I loved this sequel even more, because it's funnier, wittier, and even more action-packed, and it keeps the story moving forward with tons of bone-crunching killing in innovative ways sometimes. I love this world, and rather like the Harry Potter movies, I love that we got to experience more of this world and understand more about how it works. I really love this movie. I love this movie. I want to go see it again.
Mm. Yeah, I think this movie reminds me of the movie from last year with the Kingsman. Kingsman. It kind of reminds me. Because like that movie, this movie has style to burn. It has so much style, and, you know, it's such a cliche, but it really is a, you know, ballet of bullets. I mean, there is almost...
That's a great term, yeah.
There's almost like poetry in how, and, you know, how things are flying, and, you know, God, do heads explode here. And I think it, I really like the original John Wick. I own the DVD of it, and I've actually watched it a couple times. And that movie's so airtight, and it's so well contained within that particular universe. This one opens up the movie a little bit in terms of, you know, the world outside of John Wick, and particularly this hotel and this currency of that is used by the assassins. And but in spite of opening it up, it kind of loses some of the claustrophobia. But in spite of that, it's very, very slickly directed. It's very stylish. I'd forgotten how gruesomely violent the movie is. I mean, this one even more so. That if you can't get past that, and, you know, you almost have to see it in a comic book fashion, because it's just relentlessly, gruesomely, comically violent. But it's ultimately, I think, a work of art. It's quite amazing.
Joe?
Yeah, you know, the first John Wick movie really surprised me, because I just, the one word that I would use to describe it is cool. That movie was cool as all heck. I mean, it was well judged and fun, and it felt, even though we've seen this kind of thing before, it felt fresh because of the way that the action scenes were beautifully choreographed, and they made sense, and you could, you know, even though the violence was kind of comic book in nature, it all felt so real and guttural in the moment. So this is kind of more of the same, but kind of amped up to, you know, 11-something stupid kind of thing. It's off, you know, they crank up the dial and they turn it up higher and higher. And in some ways it loses its cool because of that. I mean, I think for me it wasn't as refreshing as the original movie, but that's because we get more of what we want. That's not to say I didn't like the movie. I mean, I really had fun. I mean, it's a rip-roaring, you know, violent, fun movie. But in some parts, I almost felt it was a little fatiguing. By the end of it, I had seen enough of the action, you know. I won't say I was bored, but I was kind of, I'd had my fill. And so, you know, I think it doesn't work as well as the original movie in that way. And I think that's what you were saying yesterday. I mean, airtight is a really great word. It was just balanced and well-judged, and it all fits together. Here, we just get, you know, too much caviar, you know. It's great to watch, but it's like, you know, 3 pounds of it is hard to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, I think what, in a way, the genius of the movie is that it's an action, right? It's an action thriller, I would say, in an underworld. And we've seen that done so many times before, it gets exhausting just to even watch those again. But it seems fresh. I mean, it seems fresh in a way that it doesn't take itself too seriously, I think. And to me, it always feels like it's there to entertain you, and it's serving you as the audience. It never forgets that it's there to entertain you.
For sure.
And so I think it's kind of like a no expenses spared, balls to the wall, crazy, fun action. You know, I mean, I couldn't think how many, I couldn't even count how many henchmen were in this movie. And then just, you know, how convoluted it is, and then the world and how that universe works. And to see Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves come together again was just delightful, you know, and that was almost like a wink and a nod. And I just loved it. I love the world. The universe is just so well realized and detailed.
No, I really liked that whole hotel where all the assassins live.
And the rules.
It has its rules.
It has
and
wonderful
you have to
integrity.
Abide by them. Yeah, there's kind of honor among thieves there, and it kind of plays very well with that. So we'd only kind of seen it referenced in a few scenes in the first movie, and here it's kind of, we get to know the owner of the hotel, and played wonderfully by Ian McShane, and the rules and what happens and the price you pay for breaking those rules and so forth. So it does open up. I do agree with you. I mean, towards the end, I was a little exhausted. Mm-hmm. Unlike, again, going back to the Kingsman climax, I was like, I could have floated off from my seat. I was so giddy with those exploding heads. And I was like, oh my God, this is so inspired.
Yeah.
The end, and I'm not giving anything away, the end of the movie is set in a museum. And there is a very obvious homage to Enter the Dragon.
Game of Death, I think.
Was it Game of... I think Enter the Dragon.
No,
with
you're
Bruce
right.
Lee. With Bruce Lee, you know, where there are mirrors everywhere and you can't tell who is where. And that is so beautiful, but they should have used economy with it, because that thing goes on for a good 10, 15 minutes. And I'm like, I'm sick of these mirrors. Somebody get out of here. You know, I'm tired. You've made your point. It's cool. So, but be that as it may, I mean, I think compared to all the nonsense, misjudged, inept, poorly thought out, by the numbers action sequel movies that get made, this one is in a different playing field altogether.
Can we talk about Keanu here? Because, you know, this is...
He's 52!
What? Right. But this is, you know, we were talking to a friend of ours a night or two ago. It was like last night. And, you know, he was saying how, you know, Keanu flipped between being brilliant and absolutely terrible. And I think, you know, this is a kind of role that is spot on perfect here for him. I mean, I can't imagine any other actor doing what he does in this movie in the way that he does it. I mean, this is Keanu personified. You know, yes, he's, you know, a kind of a crazy badass assassin, but just the way that he kind of dusts himself off after everything, and he's not phased or rattled. He's got that kind of slightly stone coolness to him, but you know, he's acutely aware of everything.
I think the favor that the writers did for him is not giving him too much dialogue. I mean, this is really mostly action for Keanu, so I think that's a great thing for him. I think when he has to deliver dialogue is where we get a failure. But just giving him action and how cool is such a great word. How cool he looks is amazing. And I think the other layer of this movie that I really loved is just the whole, you know, I was always shocked about the clothing, right? Mm-hmm. The clothing and the accessories that they have. And we get to kind of delve into why it's so important that...
It's full of little details
like
that.
The detail is really well thought out. And I think Kingsman is a really good comparison.
Yeah, it's a little things in here. I mean, I don't know if anyone noticed, but, you know, like his dog doesn't have a name.
Yeah, of course.
Because
yeah,
this movie, you know, follows on from the first movie, and he, you know, he's got a new dog now, but you can see that he hasn't had time to breathe. Like, you know, yeah, it takes a while to name an animal.
Yeah.
And he hasn't got to it yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a lovely little touch that is not necessary, but it just builds this integrity into the
yeah
world.
Yeah. And I was trying to think, would you recommend watching this movie if you haven't seen the original?
Sure.
I mean,
it doesn't matter,
right?
But it helps, I think.
I don't think it doesn't
take away from your enjoyment, I don't think, but it helps if you've seen the first one. Yeah. I mean, I want to comment on both of the last two things. I mean, it was curious that he never names his dog, and I don't know if that's just, you know, that, oh, you know, he can't be bothered or he's too sad or whatever, but I don't know, maybe it's an homage to Breakfast at Tiffany's, where Audrey Hepburn refuses to name her cat because she's afraid that she'll get too attached to it. So I don't know. And then
that's what I kind of took it as. Yeah.
And you know, with Keanu Reeves, I mean, it's been a quarter century since he's been in the cinemas now, and he's not the most animated of actors, you know. You cannot ever accuse Keanu of overacting. So I think his kind of, well, you know, whatever's going around me, and I'm not going to be bothered with it, really fits in with this particular character. And mm-hmm. he's completely humorless in the first movie and here. And it kind of works to his advantage. And, you know, he has this greasy hair here and, you know, this, you know, like he does not crack a smile at any point, and he plays it very, very straight, and it kind of works to the movie's benefit.
All right. Let's wrap this one up. So, Joe, you go first.
Sure. So, this is another helping of more of the same. And I think it's less impactful in the original movie because of that. I'm somewhere between a 7 and an 8 on this. But I'm going to... I'm going to go with the 8 because it is... It's fabulous entertainment. I mean, I don't know of any action movie fan that isn't going to be just, you know, giddily orgasmic with the choreography of this movie. It's stunning. So 8 out of 10, and you know, just doesn't stand up under scrutiny to John Wick 1.
Yes,
yeah. Somebody last week was asking me before the Oscars what movies they should watch, but their only condition was that, you know, considering everything else that's going on in the world, they didn't want anything depressing. And I went through the list of movies which are nominated for best film this year, and Lion is the only one which is halfway not depressing. Every right. other movie that is nominated, you know, so there's a perception right now that, you know, it's only the dark, you know, depressing movies which are worthy of recognition. And I kind of feel bad about
La La Land.
La La Land and Lion, yeah. But yeah. So I kind of feel bad about, you know, a good horror movie which is so good, but it'll never get nominated. I think the last time a horror movie won an Oscar was Silence of the Lambs in the 80s. So it's the same thing with an action movie. I mean, I would give, for example, Die Hard, the original one, I would easily give it a 9 out of 10 or even a 10 out of 10. But when it came out, nobody really appreciated it. So I think we need to appreciate genre films which really elevate them. And this is a B movie, which is an A while being a B movie. It's as good as you can be with a B movie. Me personally, the violence really bothered me this time. And I was thinking, was the original one really this bone crunching? Was it really this? Oh, but outside of that, I mean, it's just so, it's got just style to burn. It's so beautiful to look at it. You know, it's very focused. There's a whole middle piece set in Rome, which is something else. It's
under the catacombs, which was amazing.
It kind of is. It's some kind of fever dream, the way the whole thing plays out there as well. So it's all very beautifully realized. So 8 out of 10 for me, easily.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you enjoyed the first John Wick, then rush out and see this. You won't be disappointed. And 8 out of 10 for me as well.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's really good.
It's a very, very interesting franchise. Yeah. And I still need to do some homework to see if there's some kind of backstory here or source material.
Is it based on a comic book? Yeah.
I don't know. It feels that way. I mean, it has, you know, it has such, the universe that it's built in has all these rules that don't feel like they need explaining, right? They're just there and you accept them because, of course, that's the way it is in that universe. And it doesn't, there's no... you know, exposition kind of telling us about why
it makes sense, right?
Here's the hotel, and here's, you know, everyone pays each other with these gold coins, and you know, they all speak with to each other, and they, you know, so it's it feels like there's a
it's a very gentlemanly look at but gangs
it feels like there's
way,
like you know, like a series of 10 books out
there. It's very much like a comic book.
It does.
It feels very much, and not to again not to harp on the same thing, but you know, with like you said, with the death count in this movie, it's almost like you're in a video game where whoever comes in front of you, you kill them without any moral, you know, consideration or any consequence. You just shoot because, you know, it's somebody fake. It's somebody in a video game, and you move along. And the movie almost has that philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
People are just dispensed with, you know, without even thinking about anything. So it even feels more like a video game from that perspective.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of source material here. It was really something that was born up as a screenplay.
Oh,
very good.
Perfect stuff. All right. Movie number three then is Logan.
So Logan is by director James Mangold, who previously made Copland, Girl Interrupted, Aiden Leopold, Walk the Line, 310 to Yuma. And he returned in 2013 with his first entry in the superhero genre with the movie Wolverine, which kind of was an origin story for the character of Wolverine from X-Men, famously played by Hugh Jackman. So here in 2017, 4 years later, is a continuation, same director, same character, this time called Logan. The IMDb, I haven't seen this movie, and the IMDb write-up says that in the near future, Veery Logan cares for an ailing Professor X, Professor X from the X-Men movies, played by Patrick Stewart, in a hideout on the Mexican border. But Logan's attempts to hide from the world and his legacy are upended when a young mutant arrives being pursued by dark forces. So the movie is written by James Mangold along with Scott Frank and Michael Green. And it stars Hugh Jackman in the title role, as well as Patrick Stewart, Boyd Holbrook, Stephen Merchant, Richard E. Grant, and Eric LaSalle. I was out of town, so I missed out on watching this movie, although I was very eager to do so. You guys did. Do we need another story yet about Wolverine?
Well, you won't get one after this for sure, because this is the
he dies.
No, but this is the Hugh Jackman swan song, right? I mean, it's been widely said that this this is the last time that he's going to play this character. So, you know, this we will not get additional Wolverine movies. That's for sure. What I'll say is that this is a huge departure from what's come before. I missed the Wolverine X-Men. I think we saw X-Men Origins Wolverine, and then the one that was called The Wolverine in the middle. So I missed that. But this is
You didn't watch the middle one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So this is a major shift in tone for a comic book movie. It does the R-rated thing, and it goes, I mean, it starts off hard R. I mean, there are so many F-bombs in the first scene that I was like, looking, I was trying to get a reaction from Rashmi. I was like, wait a second, this is a comic book movie, right? And it goes to very deep, dark places. I think it's trying to be, you know, the Dark Knight of the X-Men world. It's taking this character into deep, gritty territory. What I'll say, though, is I did enjoy it. I think it was a little off-putting at first, to be in this R-rated world of X-Men, because I find X-Men to be a very PG-13 franchise. So I couldn't adapt to that for a long time. It was like shock, shock, shock. But at the same time, this is a nicely constructed movie. Is it deserving of its 97% Rotten Tomato right now? I think that's a little high, but I'm interested to hear what Rashmi thinks.
So I think it answers the important question, which I always think about, which is what happens to an aging superhero? What happens when they get old? And I agree with you, Joe. I was very disturbed by seeing Professor Xavier say the F-bomb. That was very off-putting to me. But this is really such a confusing, pointless movie.
Oh.
And over 2 hours of pointless. We just spoke about bone-crunching violence, right? In this one, I could not tolerate the... It was so violent and so bone-crunching. I just couldn't tolerate it. It's set in 2029, but there's nothing 2029 about it. This has no connection to what I remember of The Wolverine or Wolverine the origin story. It just is it comes out of nowhere. There's no explanation. Something's happened that's put them in a situation and we know nothing of what's happened.
Right.
So I just found the whole thing incredibly tiresome. And like you were saying, how tired you were in John Wick, I felt exhausted. By the 1.5 hour mark, I was literally wanting to leave the theater.
Wow.
I hated this movie. I hated this movie.
What?
I kept looking for the... Oh! And I kind of got it a little bit at the kind of 1.5 hour mark, but then it never delivered.
Fascinating. I mean, it's
too dark?
It's pointless. I didn't understand the story. I mean, there's one obvious thing, right, that's going on. But I just didn't understand the connection of how it came about or why it happened. Or
yeah, I felt like and maybe, I don't know if there is any explanation in the movie that I missed, but this takes place a long time after the events of X-Men. And it's the kind of a post-apocalyptic world of, you know, mutants aren't, this shouldn't be a spoiler, but the mutant, because the movie gets into it very quickly, but the mutants have lost, mm-hmm. right? Mankind has trumped them, and so now
sounds like many of them have been killed off.
Yeah, now that they're a dying breed, and you know, Logan surviving and Xavier surviving, and the Steve Merchant character surviving by hiding under the radar. They're in this little kind of underworld, trying to live out the remaining days in as much peace as they can muster. So there isn't much in the way of telling us how we got there. And there are little revelations, little plot points that suggest some of why we are where we are, but it doesn't really go there. And so it feels like there's a piece missing, almost like they're setting up a prequel to kind of say, you know, and here endeth the X-Men type thing. But
yeah,
that is off-putting. And I think, to your point, Rashmi, I understand why you think it was pointless, because you don't know, other than surviving, what they're doing and where they're going. And he's given a reason to do something quite long into the movie. So I get what you're saying, but I didn't think it was horrible. I mean, it was very satisfying in some ways to finally see a character who has, you know, built-in skeleton titanium or whatever they are, adamantium claws, rip people's heads off. Because that's the very first thing that you'd expect a Wolverine would do, right? He has rage, he has power, and he has these gigantic, indestructible claws that protrude from his hands. And, you know, all you ever see them do in the other movies is kind of disappear behind, you know, into somebody's back. And here there is blood and there are...
heads falling off.
Decapitations.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, what's the term for arms being chopped off? You know, they're kind of... you know, appendage ectomies and all sorts of things. And it's kind of satisfying to finally see, you know, what an R-rated comic book movie could be like. Because, you know, when you think about the destruction and power, like, you know, we talk about Batman versus Superman, where, you know, Superman last year just pummeled somebody through a brick wall. Well, the reality of what that would be like if a person was crushed, you know, it would be like blood splattering everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always cleaned up. Here, they just go there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought the other thing is, I thought it was trying to be edgy in the sense that it's introducing this young mutant into the mix. But I didn't, it takes itself so seriously. There's no fun in this movie. There's no joyful moments. There's mm-hmm. definitely no fun or very little comedy or tongue in cheek. And if, you know, I made the comparison, for me, it was like watching Hit Girl in Kick-Ass. And how fun Hit Girl was. I mean, you know, she's crazy, but there was none of the joy of having someone who is a young mutant who has these abilities. It's just so serious and dark and heavy and tiring. I was so exhausted.
I mean, some of the people I know who have watched this film, I mean, they said that it's interesting that this movie is not an action movie, but it's a character study, which is an odd thing to do with a, you know, with a superhero kind of thing. But would you agree with that? Like, if you see it as a character study, does it sense? Or Because I really loved the Wolverine last, you know, in 2013, the one which was set in Japan. I really liked that one. Gorgeous to look at.
Yeah, it was beautiful to look at. I mean, Hugh Jackman, I think, plays Logan stroke Wolverine very well. I mean, there's depth in terms of you understand why he's doing what he's doing. But no, I couldn't see any character arc or not a great one.
Well, no, I agree with you there, Rashmi, to some extent. I mean, to call it a character movie oversells it a little bit. I think you might be disappointed if that's what you go in expecting. I think at the end of the day, this is a brooding superhero movie of the style that I kind of like. I feel like it lacks, you know, the themes that I particularly like in superhero movies, which is the you know, the ethical dilemmas posed by, you know, having all of this power and people maybe not understanding who you are and what you are. You know, this doesn't go to those kind of places. Instead, I think it portrays man as the evil one, and these superheroes have this kind of ancillary role ultimately that doesn't take us anywhere. So yeah, it's dark, but I don't think it's characterful. You know, for me, it ended up, I handled it more enjoyably as kind of an action flick. With, you know, I thought the young girl who plays the mutant was brilliantly cast.
Oh, I mean, she was brilliantly cast. I think she was very, very good. I just feel like
there was no fun.
I agree.
I mean, this movie is just joyless, heavy and joyless.
Yeah. So I'll wrap it up. I just, again, I'll say some things happen. We don't know what, and it doesn't make sense. So for me, this is 4 out of 10.
What?
Yeah.
That's brutal. That's more brutal than the decapitations. Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I mean, if you asked me to sit through this again, I would literally cry.
So, you know, I was thinking of this as more of an 8 out of 10, but it's nowhere near as accomplished and fun to watch as John Wick. So to give them the same score, I think, in the same podcast is not appropriate, not responsible of me. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. But, you know, I kind of get what they were doing here. I think it could have been tightened up because it did feel slow at times. And you know, for me, the movie was mostly about its kind of action set pieces. And, you know, the there's a kind of a siege at one point that they're trying to survive. And, you know, I kind of enjoyed those moments more than I did the character stuff. And it's not remarkable. I think the reviews here are very surprising that it's 97%.
Well, yeah, I'm shocked.
On Rotten Tomatoes, and people are saying, more than one review is saying it's the best X-Men movie yet.
Yeah, I struggle with that. I mean, it's certainly better than the last X-Men movie.
Right.
But,
I love X-Men. But I love the joyfulness and how innovative they are.
Yeah.
This was not innovative.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going to go R-rated, then you need to have some of the humor that Deadpool had. And
yes,
I think,
agree.
Otherwise, it does kind of bog you down with all this, like, seriousness. And, you know, Yazdi, I know you're not a fan of the Nolan-verse Batman movies in the sense of they brood and they're dark and, you know. But they don't have any. This doesn't have any of the cleverness of those movies. The setups and the interesting, you know, character plays. At least for me. Okay, well, that was Logan, John Wick 2, and 50 Shades Darker. Sequelitis, indeed. Mm. Yeah, good observation at the beginning of the podcast, Rashmi. So let's wrap it up for today. We will get back with you at some point on some Netflix picks, but just go out there. There's tons of stuff. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.